can read an article that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on Saturday, March 6th of 1982, almost a year ago. The following story originally appeared in Newsday at Stateline, New York, and headlined, Reagan Choices Link to Nazi War Criminal. J. Peter Grace, the New York industrialist and philanthropist whom President Reagan appointed as chairman of a private sector task force that will try to improve government efficiency, has been the subject of controversy because of his relationship with a man convicted at Nuremberg of war crimes. The president, in announcing Grace's appointment, had praised him in a speech in Los Angeles Wednesday as an outstanding businessman whose new task force, the Private Sector Survey on Cost Control in the Federal Government, would leave no stone unturned in their search to root out inefficiencies and waste of taxpayers' dollars, unquote. Presidential spokesman Larry Speake said yesterday he did not know if the White House was aware of Grace's relationship with Dr. Otto Ambrose, the convicted war criminal. Interrupting here, Ambrose's last name is A-M-B-R-O-S, by the way. Continuing, Grace, 69, of Manhasset, New York, is chairman and chief executive officer of W.R. Grace & Company, an international chemical company. He said he also has business interests in oil, gas, coal, energy services, jewelry stores, restaurants, and other fields. His company spent an estimated $400,000 last year on newspaper ads promoting Reagan's tax cut proposal. In an interview Tuesday, Grace confirmed that his chemical company had for many years employed Ambrose as a technical advisor and that he had written a letter to the State Department to help Ambrose obtain a visa in 1958 to visit the United States. Reviewing once again the relationship between J. Peter Grace and Otto Ambrose. I'm going to read that section again. In an interview Tuesday, Grace confirmed that his chemical company had for many years employed Ambrose as a technical advisor, and he had written a letter to the State Department to help Ambrose obtain a visa in 1958 to visit the United States. I just don't see what that has to do with the price of eggs, Grace said. He called stories about his ties to Ambrose a good way for enemies to get me, unquote. Grace said the White House has been told about the controversy. Ambrose, in a telephone interview with Newsday last year from his home in Mannheim, West Germany, was asked about his activities during the war. This happened a very long time ago, he told Newsday correspondent Murray Waas, or Voss, W-A-A-S. It involved Jews. We do not think about it anymore. This is all boring to me, Ambrose said in a subsequent interview. I know Americans are always disturbed about the past. I don't understand why. You Americans are funny. Ambrose retired as a Grace consultant on December 31st, 1981. At the Nuremberg war trials, prosecutors presented evidence of Ambrose's negotiations with SS officials to provide the huge IG Farben chemical plant with 200,000 slave laborers from the Auschwitz concentration camp. After the deal was set, Ambrose wrote to a fellow director of Farben, quote, Our new friendship with the SS shows gratifying effects, unquote. According to the prosecutors, because the Auschwitz camp was several miles from the rubber plant, Ambrose ordered construction of another concentration camp, Monowitz, right next to the factory for greater efficiency. More than 25,000 slave laborers died at Monowitz and the rubber plant while Ambrose was factory manager. Repeating that last sentence again, more than 25,000 slave laborers died at Monowitz and the rubber plant while Ambrose was factory manager. Ambrose was convicted of mass murder at Nuremberg and served several years of an eight-year prison sentence. To go on and give you a little more background on Dr. Otto Ambrose, Dr. Otto Ambrose was the individual who selected for IG Farben, selected Auschwitz for IG Farben as the site for their for two industrial installations to be run by slave labor. Information about this was carried in a book called The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben. That book was authored by a man named Joseph Borken. Joseph Borken served on the Antitrust Division, the Special Warfare Section of the Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice during World War II, which basically was entrusted with the job of attempting to break up and deal with the complex cartel system by which Nazi Germany acquired much of its war-making capacity. In this job, of course, Joseph Borken came across I.G. Farben and had to deal with it extensively. And his book about his exploits and about the I.G., this book, The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben, was published in 1978, and it was copyrighted 1978, I should say, published in paperback by Signet Books, okay? So, or by Pocket Books, rather, which is a division of Signet. So, Joseph Borken's Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben, available in softcover by Pocket Books, copyright 1978. Dr. Otto Ambrose was selected by an IG official named Kroc, K-R-A-U-C-H, to survey a possible site for IG Farben's new industrial installations, which were to involve a synthetic rubber plant as well as a synthetic oil plant. And eventually, Otto Ambrose came to select Silesia, recommend to Krauk as Silesia, and specifically Auschwitz, as the site for these installations. Krauk accepted Ambrose's recommendations, and the Auschwitz concentration camp became the fount for labor for these installations, and thereby was formed an infamous relationship, one which was to go down in history. Joseph Borgen on the Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben relates the story of how Otto Ambrose came to choose Auschwitz as the site for these camps. Kroc assigned Ambrose, one of I.G.'s most talented Buna chemists, to survey Silesia. Ambrose was an unusual figure. He was the I.G. expert on both Buna, Buna being a form of synthetic rubber, and poison gas. Moreover, in 1932, he had conceived the underlying theories which ultimately led to the modern magnetic tape technology. Interrupting here, keep in mind the fact that Otto Ambrose was in charge of poison gas development for I.G. Farben. That places him right in the center of the extermination of European Jewry and other ethnic groups, as well as in the development of I.G. Farben's infamous slave labor installations at Auschwitz. Keep this in mind, because we're going to talk about I.G. Farben and their poison gas a little later. In evaluating the Polish Silesian area, Ambrose made a personal and detailed exploration of the proposed sites. The one he finally recommended was particularly suited for the installation. A coal mine was nearby, and three rivers converged to provide a vital requirement, a large source of water. Keep in mind that coal mine. We're going to speculate about that in a second as well. Together with these three rivers, the Reich Railroad and the Autobahn afforded excellent transportation to and from the area. These were not decisive advantages, however, over the Norwegian site previously considered. But the Silesian location had one advantage that was overwhelming. The SS had plans to expand enormously a concentration camp nearby. The promise of an inexhaustible supply of slave labor was an attraction that could not be resisted. Kroc wholeheartedly accepted Silesia over Norway, where the population was already in ferment over the brutality of the German occupation. The historic nature of Kroc's choice could never have crossed his mind. The name of the Polish village he selected for the Buna site was Auschwitz. Once the project and site were formally approved by the Reich and the IG management, enthusiastic about expanding its operation, assigned the name IG Auschwitz to the new division, hereafter the official designation in IG's meticulously ordered table of corporate organization. Technologically and economically, it was only natural that a synthetic oil plant be built as a companion to the rubber factory. For Bergius and Buna, high-pressure chemistry was the common ground. Accordingly, a large hydrogenation plant to convert coal into oil with a capacity of 778,000 tons a month was also begun. The IG directors selected Ambrose for the rubber installation and Heinrich Bertefisch for the gasoline plant at Auschwitz. For the two youngest members of the managing board of directors, both still under 40, these appointments represented an important step upward in the IG hierarchy. After all, it gave Ambrose and Bertefisch authority over the largest synthetic rubber and oil installation in the world. With Hitler and IG marching together, the future appeared to be without limit. The possible rewards appeared boundless. Everything about the Auschwitz project indicated that it was heaven sent. Interesting choice of words in light of the subsequent association between Vatican luminary J. Peter Grace, head of the American wing of the Knights of Malta, and the Dr. Otto Ambrose, the individual who came up with this apparently heaven-sent plan for building industrial installations at Auschwitz and availing themselves of Auschwitz inmates as slaves. The story of the SS's slave labor pool is fairly well known. For the benefit of those of you who may not be too aware of just what the kinds of working conditions these slaves of the Reich were subjected to, I'm going to read a section here which describes the working conditions at the IG Auschwitz installations, which were the site for which were selected by Otto Ambrose, one of which, apparently, maybe perhaps two of which, were personally managed by Otto Ambrose, both the Monowitz plant and the other rubber plant close to, I guess it was only one installation, that managed by Ambrose, and the oil plant was managed by Bertefisch. Anyway, Ambrose managed the rubber plant at which the following conditions were in evidence. And keep in mind that 25,000 inmates were worked to death, okay? About the conditions at IG Auschwitz, Borken writes, at times, the inmates were literally worked to death. It was no rare occurrence that detachments of 400 to 500 men brought back with them in the evening 5 to 20 corpses. The dead were brought to the place of roll call and were counted as being present. That, by the way, from the actual transcripts of the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal. Two or three times a week, those who died on the site and those from whom all useful life had been extracted were piled on open platforms for all to see and trucked to Birkenau. For the inmate laborer, it was a useful reminder employed effectively by IG foremen and SS guards. The construction of IG Auschwitz has assured IG a unique place in business history. By adopting the theory and practice of Nazi morality, it was able to depart from the conventional economics of slavery in which slaves are traditionally treated as capital equipment to be maintained and serviced for optimum use and depreciated over a normal lifespan. Instead, IG reduced slave labor to a consumable raw material, a human ore from which the mineral of life was systematically extracted. When no usable energy remained, the living dross was shipped to the gassing chambers and cremation furnaces of the extermination center at Birkenau, where the SS recycled it into the German war economy. Gold teeth for the Reichsbank, hair for mattresses, and fat for soap. Even the moans of the doomed became a work incentive, exhorting the remaining inmates to greater effort. Almost reminds one of Reaganomics there, doesn't it? Anyway, keep in mind the kinds of conditions that prevailed at IG Auschwitz. Keep in mind the kind of conditions that prevailed under Dr. Otto Ambrose. And, of course, keep in mind Dr. Otto Ambrose's relationship with J. Peter Grace, with the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, by extension. That organization, the Knights of Malta, very much involved with W.R. Grace and Company, as we saw last week. Unfortunately, Dr. Otto Ambrose was not the only key IG foreign official who has come in contact with the Vatican and is working with the Vatican or Vatican-related elements. Another key IG Farben official, Dr. Hermann Abs, last name A-B-S, has also come up in connection with the Vatican. Now, one of the subjects we've been discussing for a long time now on Hard Rain in connection with the tangle of events surrounding the shooting of the Pope is the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano in Italy and the intersecting propaganda due scandal. One of the international banking officials called in by Pope John Paul II to manage the messy Vatican financial situation was the aforementioned Hermann Abs, okay? And just what Hermann Abs was within the hierarchy of Third Reich industry, we're going to talk about right here. The appointment by Hermann J. Abs to sort of oversee the Institute for Religious Works, the Vatican Bank, headed by the ill-starred Paul Marcinkus up until quite recently. The appointment of Hermann Abs to oversee that has been discussed in most of the major news media in this country. So if you go through the archives of your daily paper, you're likely to find that either find mention of that in late December or early January. And as I say, most major newspapers carried an account of the appointment of Hermann Abs to oversee the affairs of the Institute for Religious Works. He was appointed to a permanent advisory board, which is going to try and steer the IOR away from the kinds of financial tangles that have beset it to date. IOR, recall, for those who may be listening for the first time, is the Institute for Religious Works, the formal name for the Vatican Bank. The Vatican Bank apparently guaranteed letters of patronage to the tune of $1.4 billion of loans that were made by Banco Ambrosiano to some very shady Latin American subsidiaries. Those loans fell through. Banco Ambrosiano, Italy's largest bank, collapsed, and that has caused no end of problems for people high up in Italian politics and for the Vatican as well. One of the most informative articles about Hermann Abs and his appointment to oversee the functions of the Institute for Religious Works was carried in the National Catholic Reporter. This article, by the way, was researched for us by Ted Rubenstein. Ted Rubenstein is an excellent researcher from Palo Alto who's been sharing his research with us for some time. He is a graduate of the University of California at Berkeley, and we're all very fortunate to have access to his fine research. Ted got this from the National Catholic Reporter of January 14th, 1983. The article is by Mark R. Day, D-A-Y. He is NCR's West Coast correspondent. It's Dateline Los Angeles. It's headlined, Vatican Bank Hires Key Nazi Financier. A Jewish organization based here demanded December 29th that Pope John Paul II remove Hermann J. Abs, a prominent German banker, from a special Vatican Bank advisory group. Rabbi Marvin Heyer, H-I-E-R, dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center for Holocaust Studies, said his group had informed the Vatican 8 days earlier of their findings that Abs, 81, was highly involved in the activities of the Nazi war machine, unquote, and had demanded his immediate resignation from the Permanent Advisory Board of the Institute of Religious Works, or IOR. Monsignor Jorge Mejia, M-E-J-I-A, of the Vatican Secretariat for Promoting Christian Unity, contacted Rabbi Heyer January 5th, telling him that the Vatican was undertaking a full investigation of the Abs appointment. The investigation, he said, would be headed by Cardinal Agostino Casaroli, Secretary of State. Mejia also requested that Heyer send him a copy of a United States government report on the Deutsche Bank, completed in 1946, which details much of Abs' participation in that bank during World War II. The center has also received a letter from Archbishop Pio Lahi, L-A-G-H-I, first name P-I-O, the apostolic delegate to the U.S., assuring that, quote, proper attention is being given to the matter of your concern, unquote. Among the findings of the Wiesenthal Center and of Charles Higham, H-I-G-H-A-M, a leading expert on international banking during World War II, are the following. A U.S. Treasury report has called Abs one of the most important financial figures in the Third Reich and a man whose rise within the Nazi economy was phenomenal. Abs was a partner of Delbruck, Schickler & Company, a well-known private banking house in Berlin, a favorite of Nazi leaders Hitler, Rosenberg, and Dauleuge, the former chief of the Gestapo. That last man's last name, by the way, is D-A-L-U-E-G-E. I've also seen alternate spellings of that. Continuing, next section is very, very important. Abs served as chairman of the executive board of the Deutsche Bank, the largest bank in Nazi Germany during World War II. The Deutsche Bank provided the funds to build a rubber plant at the site of the infamous Auschwitz concentration camp. Repeating that passage again, Abs served as chairman of the executive board of the Deutsche Bank, the largest bank in Nazi Germany during World War II. The Deutsche Bank provided the funds to build a rubber plant at the site of the infamous Auschwitz concentration camp. Of course, that rubber plant was the aforementioned rubber plant founded there by Hermann Abs and by Otto Ambrose and managed by him. Recall that at the Monowitz concentration camp that Ambrose founded and managed, 25,000 Auschwitz inmates were worked. Well, 25,000 inmates were worked to death. We don't know how many from Auschwitz were worked to death before the construction of Monowitz. Continuing here with the NCR article, National Catholic Reporter article from January 14th. Abs also served on the board of the IG Farben conglomerate, which built the rubber plant. And Abs was present, said Heyer, at a meeting of the board of directors when they discussed longer hours and the use of prisoners of war to meet production demands during a labor shortage. Interrupting again, recall that concentration camp inmates were the standard work fare for IG Auschwitz, and apparently here Abs also was there to help negotiate use of prisoners of war in this capacity as well.
Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills.
IG Farben controlled a subsidiary known as Degesh, D-E-G-E-S-H, which produced Zyklon B, the chemical used to exterminate millions of Jews between 1940 and 1944. In 1950, when Konrad Adenauer became the first chancellor of the new Federal Republic of West Germany, he nominated Abs as foreign minister. The French, though, vetoed the appointment. On the basis of the evidence presented here, said Heyer, Hermann J. Abs, a key official in the Nazi war machine, does not have the moral credentials to represent a spiritual institute such as the Vatican. A spokesperson at the Apostolic Delegation in Washington, D.C., told NCR that because Abs is a German, the matter would be handled by Vatican officials rather than through Lahi's office, L-A-G-H-I. Recall that the IG Farben Degesh subsidiary, which manufactured Zyklon B, of course, that goes right back to Dr. Otto Ambrose. Dr. Otto Ambrose was in charge of IG Farben's poison gas development. Hermann Abs, one of the key managing directors of IG Farben. Recall that Hermann Abs' Deutsche Bank put up the venture capital to build IG Auschwitz, the site for which was selected by, or recommended by, by Otto Ambrose, selected by this fellow Krauk from on Ambrose's suggestion. Okay, and recall that Ambrose managed the synthetic rubber plant there. 25,000 Monowitz inmates, and we don't know how many Auschwitz inmates were worked to death at that installation. Keep in mind that Hermann Abs is now overseeing the, helping to oversee the day-to-day affairs of the ill-starred Vatican Bank. One of the most disturbing aspects of having these key IG Farben Nazi war criminals affiliated with the Vatican, or connected to it in some way, is the fact that the Pope himself, John Paul II, during World War II, worked at an IG Farben installation in Poland, which may have been one of the IG Auschwitz factories. Recall that there were synthetic rubber and oil plants there. There may have been other industrial installations as well. We know, and from information we're about to cover here, that Pope John Paul II, during World War II, worked at an IG Farben installation in Poland. We don't know whether it was one of the IG Auschwitz installations. It may have been. We're going to talk about the implications of this in a minute. Information about the Pope working for IG Auschwitz was contained in an article carried on the San Francisco Chronicle on Wednesday, January 12th of 1983. It was carried in most other major papers as well. This is a UPI story, Dateline Los Angeles, and headlined, Pope Once Slaved for Vatican AIDS Firm. A German banker who sits on a Vatican advisory board was an executive of a company that owned a stone quarry where Karol Wojtyla, now Pope John Paul II, was forced to work in Nazi-occupied Poland, documents show. A Jewish group that is seeking the removal of Hermann Abs from the Vatican Bank Advisory Board provided United Press International with transcripts of testimony given in 1945 before a Senate subcommittee and information from a biography of John Paul published in 1979. In a sense, Abs was the Pope's employer, said Rabbi Marvin Heyer, head of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. The center, which charges that Abs was a financial power behind the Third Reich who personally benefited from the expropriation of Jewish and Polish property, has been trying to force the Vatican to rescind his appointment. The Vatican said last week that it was investigating the allegations. In a report titled, Elimination of German Resources for War, the subcommittee of the Senate Committee on Military Affairs said Abs was a director of Deutsche Solvaywerke AG, a Belgian conglomerate that was controlled by Germany after Belgium fell in 1940. Interrupting very briefly, Deutsche Solvaywerke AG is a, as mentioned here, a Belgian-based chemical conglomerate. As the Third Reich expanded, as Hitler conquered Europe, all of the chemical companies in Europe were grafted onto IG Farben, which itself a cartel grew and grew and grew, so that eventually IG Farben ran all of the chemical, petrochemical industry on continental Europe. They had a total monopoly on the petrochemical industry, so that the Deutsche Solvaywerke would have been grafted onto them after the Nazi conquest of Belgium. And the Solvay factory had an outlet or a subsidiary in Poland that was in the vicinity of IG Auschwitz. It was certainly close enough to the city of Krakow, which is near Auschwitz, for the Pope to work there. So we don't know if this was IG Auschwitz, but keep this in mind. Keep in mind that the Solvay chemical factory, like all chemical firms in continental Europe, came under the stewardship not only of Nazi Germany, but they became actually part of the growing IG Farben chemical cartel, of which Otto Ambrose was a key member, of which Hermann Abs was one of the main managing directors. Continuing here with this Chronicle article from January 12th of 1983. According to John Paul II, a pictorial biography published by McGraw-Hill, the future Pope was compelled to work during World War II at, quote, the stone quarry linked with the Solvay chemical works, unquote. Now recall that there was a coal mine, which was one of the key aspects of one of the key factors that caused Otto Ambrose to select Auschwitz as the site for the synthetic rubber and also the oil and chemical plant, the oil plant, synthetic oil plant at Auschwitz. We don't know whether the coal mine is this stole. We don't know whether the stone quarry and the coal mine are one and the same, whether they're two separate installations here. But keep that in mind. Repeating here this last passage. According to John Paul II, a pictorial biography published by McGraw-Hill, the future Pope was compelled to work during World War II at, quote, the stone quarry linked with the Solvay chemical works. Under the Nazis, Poles were forced to work under the threat of confinement in prison camps. The Senate report also said Abs was chairman of a mining subsidiary of Solvay. The Wiesenthal Center said that it was not clear whether the Pope worked for that particular company, but that the quarry was run by the parent firm of which Abs was a board member. Okay, that parent firm being Solvay, which in turn was owned by IG Farben, of which Abs, as we've seen, was a member of the board of directors. Abs, now 81, was chairman of the Deutsche Bank from 1940 to 1944. Okay, so we know that Pope John Paul II worked at a stone quarry owned by the IG Farben-controlled Solvay chemical factory. We don't know whether that was the coal mine, or you'd think that they would distinguish between a stone quarry and a coal mine, but sometimes these details do get mixed up. Now, we also don't know just what it was that Pope John Paul II was doing at the IG Farben subsidiary in Belgium. We don't know whether this was IG Auschwitz as well. Now, the Pope was in Krakow, which is very near Oswiecim, which is the Polish name for Auschwitz. And confirming some of the information, this excerpted from the book mentioned in the text of that Chronicle article. This is from Pope John Paul II, a pictorial biography authored by Peter Hebblethwaite, H-E-B-B-L-E-T-H-W-A-I-T-E, and a man named Ludwig Kaufmann, K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. And also with the collaboration here of Dr. Alois Anklin, A-N-K-L-I-N, and Dr. Reinhold Lehmann, L-E-H-M-A-N-N. Okay? A brief excerpt from Pope John Paul II, a pictorial biography. This published in hardcover in 1979 by McGraw-Hill. In 1942, Wojtyla's studies took a completely different direction. He became a student of theology in the underground seminary run by Archbishop Sapica, S-A-P-I-C-H-A, while continuing to work at the Solvay factory. He has never fully explained what made him decide to become a priest. And still later here, the events of the 6th of August, 1944 showed just how dangerous his decision was and left him immured in the Archbishop's palace until the liberation. What happened was this. A few days after the Warsaw Uprising, Gestapo and SS units descended upon Krakow and arrested all males between the ages of 15 and 50. There were sounds of shooting in the streets. Wojtyla stayed in his flat in Tynika Street and prayed. The house was not searched. But from this Black Sunday onward, the Archbishop decided that the seminarians would live in his palace and sleep on makeshift beds in the drawing room. They would not emerge until the Germans had gone. But having abandoned his work at the Solvay factory, Wojtyla was now without an Arbeitskarte and was therefore a non-person. Okay, so it appears from the description here that calling Pope John Paul II a slave is exaggerating things somewhat. Apparently he was not an inmate at the concentration camps and not a slave. No doubt he worked under difficult conditions, but he did have an Arbeitskarte and was not confined within a concentration camp. So again, the relationship between, or the exact nature of the activities of John Paul II at the IG Farben installation in Poland remains to be seen. It also remains to be seen whether the Solvay stone quarry, again, Solvay part of IG Farben, and Krakow being near Oswiecim or Auschwitz, whether that was, in fact, in any way connected with the Monowitz or the Auschwitz, IG Auschwitz. We don't know whether the Solvay stone quarry was actually part of the IG Auschwitz installation, or whether IG Farben had other installations in Poland and in the Krakow area. Anyway, all of this certainly worth keeping in mind. Before terminating the broadcast today, I'd like to sum up for just a minute what we've looked at. We began by reviewing J. Peter Grace and his role with the Knights of Malta, the military wing of the church, and in turn the profound role wielded by his company, W.R. Grace and Company, with the Knights of Malta. After that, we took a look at the close working relationship and friendship between J. Peter Grace and Dr. Otto Ambrose, J. Peter Grace being head of the American wing of the Knights. Otto Ambrose, of course, was one of the key functionaries and member of the board of directors of IG Farben. He recommended, and his recommendation was followed up, that Auschwitz be used as the site for some contemplated slave labor installations by IG Farben. He was IG's expert for poison gas and for synthetic rubber, also helped develop magnetic tape technology. We took a look at some of the horrendous working conditions that prevailed at IG Auschwitz. We then took a look at the appointment of Dr. Hermann Abs as a member of the Oversight Committee for the Institute for Religious Works, the Vatican Bank. Hermann Abs, also like Dr. Otto Ambrose, a member of the Board of Directors of IG Farben. As president of the Deutsche Bank, he put forth the venture capital to build the synthetic rubber plant that Dr. Otto Ambrose managed at IG Auschwitz. That Monowitz installation, 25,000 inmates, at that Monowitz installation, 25,000 inmates were worked to death. We also took a look at the fact that the IG Farben company manufactured the poison gas that was used to eliminate the Jews. That, of course, fell under Otto Ambrose's stewardship. We also took a look at the fact that Pope John Paul II worked for an I.G. Farben subsidiary called Solvay Chemical Company. He worked at a stone quarry owned by Solvay, Solvay being a subsidiary of I.G. Farben, as were all chemical companies in Europe under Nazi, under the domination of Europe by the Nazis. We don't know whether the Solvay factory, where the Solvay quarry where the Pope worked, was part of the IG Auschwitz installation, of, which was managed by Otto Ambrose and funded by Hermann Abs. But since Krakow is in the Oswiecim or Auschwitz area, certainly it is, as I say so often on this broadcast, food for thought, grounds for further research. And we also took a look at the fact that Pope John Paul II eventually, according to the account in McGraw-Hill biography, went underground and thereby lost his working card. We know that he was not a slave, at least not in the sense of most of the inmates from those concentration camps. He was not himself an inmate in those concentration camps. So just what the relationship was between him and Solvay Chemical Factory, we don't know. And certainly it's worth looking into in light of the intimate involvement of or the strong connections between two key Nazi war criminals and IG Farben functionaries and the Vatican. This winds things up for me today. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks so much for listening.
And that was, again, a Hard Rain tape from 1983 featuring the same Dave Emery, who is here in the flesh with me, Nip Tuck, tonight in the studios of KFJC as we just about wrap up the information portion of our broadcast. We do have one last article to read, and then it looks like we're going to have a good 45 minutes or so for phone calls. So those of you who are hardy of spirit and intestinally fortitudinous enough to have stuck with us to the bitter end here, or who have tuned in partway through.
Or been drinking coffee.
Or have been drinking coffee. Or whatever your choice of stimulants. We welcome your phone calls. But first, we're going to finish up here with the last section. You will remember early on in the broadcast, which is quite a while back now, we talked about some of the involvement of the Catholic Church in the events in what was being called at the time the sovereign state of Croatia, the fascist state of Croatia, but was in fact what it was before and after World War II known as Yugoslavia, when the Croatian Ustasha, the native fascist Croatians, took over Yugoslavia, proclaimed the state of Croatia, and began to systematically destroy primarily the Serbs, the Serbians, who were one of the other, along with the Montenegrins and I believe the Bosnians and the Herzegovinans, who are the nationalities that had made up Yugoslavia when it was cobbled together after World War I. And the Serbs and the Croatians have long been enemies. The Croatians are Catholics. The Serbians are Eastern Orthodox. And the Croatians began to systematically destroy the Serbs. And we quoted one man as saying that what needed to be done was to kill a third of the Serbs, expel a third of the Serbs, and force the other third into Catholicism and thereby make Croatia entirely Catholic in 10 years. Well, they went a long way towards doing that. We talked about the absolutely hideous acts perpetrated on Serbs, Gypsies, Jews, and others by the Croatian fascists, by the Ustasha, under the government of Ante Pavelić. And we talked later on in the broadcast about a Father Dragonovac, who was a key liaison between the Vatican and the Pavelić government, and the fact that the Vatican did virtually nothing to curb the excesses of the so-called Catholics of Croatia.
Well, beyond that, it actually had it not only winked at the Pavelić government, but had, for all intents and purposes, a working relationship, as Draganovic's position indicates. Draganovic also a key figure later on in the rat line.
Yes, and we mentioned that when the British envoy brought up some of the terrible things going on in Croatia, Pope Pius XII referred to Ante Pavelić, the head of the Croatian fascist state, as a much maligned person. Meanwhile, at the same time that he was talking about the true Ustasha is a man who can take a knife and rip a baby from the womb of its mother, and they were chaining people together with a wire and throwing them off of cliffs and then throwing hand grenades down on top of them and having throat-slitting contests and things of this nature, a much maligned person. Anyway, one of the men whose involvement with the Ustasha government has been a source of some controversy was a man by the name of Cardinal Stepinac, S-T-E-P-I-N-A-C, Cardinal Stepinac. We talked about him. He was, I believe at the time, the highest-ranking Catholic in Croatia. He was also a member
of the Croatian Church, right?
Head of the Croatian Church and also a member of the Ustasha government.
Mm-hmm. And basically, Stepinac was interned as a war criminal by the Yugoslavian government after World War II, And his internment and alleged martyrdom, alleged at least by the Ustashi sympathizers, has been a subject of considerable controversy. Now, we took a look at the curious fact that Pope John Paul II appears to have worked at Auschwitz or another IG Farben facility. Despite that, he selected a man, Hermann Abs, who had basically put forth a venture capital to build the slave labor camps to help straighten out the Vatican financial scandals, which we'll be talking about next week. This very same Pope John Paul II, and you can ask yourselves whether or not a man who was a slave would have hired the person who enslaved him to straighten out his financial affairs. That's a question we'll look at next week. Beyond that, this very same Pope has proposed a visit to Yugoslavia. However, the permission has yet to be granted him because he wants to pray at the grave of Archbishop Stepanak, something the Yugoslavians are not crazy about.
Also, this same Pope, Pope John Paul II, on the death of Cardinal Cook of Chicago, who was one of the most archly conservative of all the American cardinals and was reputed to have garnered a small empire for himself in terms of money and political clout in Chicago, and was also reliably said to have behaved in many ways that were entirely unkeeping with his status in the church. When Cardinal Cook died, he was replaced at the behest of John Paul II with a man named Cardinal Joseph Bernardin. B-E-R-N-A-R-D-I-N, who is currently the cardinal for Chicago. And we have a letter here that was published in Croatian Voice, a Croatian newspaper, but was also sent to Cardinal Bernardin.
Croatian Voice, by the way, is a publication based in Canada, and it's very closely linked with Ustashi, and routinely expresses tremendous sympathy for Ustashi, including a great outpouring of sympathy for the recently extradited Andrei Artukovich.
That's right. Another man who is responsible for the deaths of many, many people.
By the way, we should also mention research credit for this goes to a listener who was kind enough to send this in.
Now, in case, just to give you a hint in beforehand, if you're having trouble, if you have trouble waiting with me through this particular letter written in I'm not sure if it's the translation, if it was originally in Croatian or what, I imagine it was in English, but sometimes a little awkward in terms of its wording. Basically, what this man is doing is commending Cardinal Bernardin for supporting a Catholic observance of the death of Cardinal Stepanak. Again, as we talked about, a member of the Ustasha government that was responsible for these famous throat-slitting contests and other things.
Specifically, here, Cardinal Bernardin is presiding over a mass in honor of Stepanak. So that's it's a considerable gesture on the part of the Archbishop of Chicago toward a man who basically was participating in one of the most brutal regimes in the history of the human race.
Again, a letter from Croatian Voice of February 15, 1985. It's addressed to Cardinal Joseph Bernardin, Archdiocese and Chancery of Chicago. Your Eminence, we are thrilled to learn from the Croatian Catholic Culture Link, Inc., that you are presiding at the Holy Eucharist on Sunday, February 10th at 3 p.m. at the 25th anniversary of the martyrdom of our beloved Cardinal Stepanak. May I take the liberty to mention my small involvement in the sequence of tragic events. I was fortunate to be with Cardinal Spellman in New York at the time of the arrest of Archbishop Stepanak. Parenthetically, I would insert that the arrest of Cardinal Stepanak did not take place, of Archbishop Stepanak did not take place in New York, but in Yugoslavia. I personally witnessed to Cardinal Spellman the heroic stand that the Archbishop Stepanak took at the entrance to the Zagreb Cathedral in 1941, when he greeted civilian representatives of the state of Croatia and Hitler's envoy, Siegfried von Kascha, with the words, quote, "I invite you to enter this temple of God where there are no differences in races or color," unquote. This caused turmoil and reluctance of the German representative to enter the Croatian cathedral, but finally he did. Cardinal Spellman, 3 months after the arrest, named the Catholic school at White Plains Archbishop Stepanak. I used to visit Cardinal Spellman periodically, as he was very close to Pope Pius XII, whom I saw many times during the war. Pope Pius XII was interested in the Croatian nation and the martyrdom of hundreds of clergy who were persecuted and killed after the arrival of the communists.
Recall in the section of the Nazi legacy that we read, many of these clergy were not only in one case, one of them was head of the Jasenovac concentration camp, one of the most brutal in all of Europe, but many of them were active and apparently hearty participants in the Croatian Ustashi atrocities.
Again, they mentioned scores of people forcibly converted at gunpoint to Catholicism with the priest standing on and then dragged out and shot anyway. The letter writer continues, Cardinal Spellman introduced me to one of his assistants, Monsignor Ivan Illich, a most interesting philosopher and a rebellious theologian. I knew Ivan Illich as a schoolboy in Split, Dalmatia, Croatia, and I kept in touch with him for years of his life in Mexico. I saw him last 8 years ago in Vancouver for lunch. Cardinal Spellman was willing to have a special service for Cardinal Stepanak at the Eucharistic Congress in Munich in 1960, which I also attended. But the German hierarchy was considering it dangerous in the face of attendance from Poland and Eastern Europe. In conclusion, Your Eminence, I would like to bring to your attention a very serious and important thought. And then he quotes, but I have a feeling it's his own thought. Quote, for 25 years, Cardinal Stepanak's death was celebrated in Croatian churches all over the world. But, Your Eminence, that should have been celebrated in all the cathedrals of the Christian world. We try in vain to prevail that the martyrdom of this man, through his unswerving stand for the rights of religion against the force of atheism, is the martyrdom of the universal Catholic faith and not only the Croatian nation. However, very few cathedrals in the Western world held services to honor him. Unquote. This is why, on behalf of our 20 organizations in Canada and 5,000 members, I extend to you our deep and profound thanks for attending this event so important in the history of the Croatian nation and to all the Christian and civilized world. I remain, sir, your most obedient servant, Mladen G. Zorkin. Well, again, as Dave pointed out, there is a certain irony in Pope Pius XII being interested in the martyrdom of hundreds of clergy persecuted and killed after the arrival of the communists. Again, this is the same Pius XII who, in the Nazi legacy, was described as basically standing around saying nothing while these same clergy were running concentration camps like Jasenovac, helping to forcibly convert hundreds and thousands of Serbs to Catholicism, and many of them being killed anyway. In many cases, actually participating, according to that book, in these various atrocities themselves. Pius could only call Ante Pavelić, the dictator of Ustasha, Croatia, a, quote, much maligned person, but yet managed to find it in himself to be interested in the martyrdom of hundreds of clergy persecuted and killed after the arrival of the communists, some of whom perhaps were not as innocent as could be.
Of course, now, again, this is the same man who's, we're not even going to take time to review it, but whose links and cooperation with fascism date back to 1919 when he gave church funds to Hitler to, quote, quell the devil's works. And make of that what you will in light of the information we've presented.
Absolutely. And remember one last thing, though, while we're talking about the enigma of John Paul II, because, again, the farther we get into this, you'll see that John Paul II becomes, as once was said, what is it, a riddle wrapped inside of an enigma. His position in this whole thing is very unclear. On one hand, we will be developing information later in the show that suggests his overtures to the Eastern Bloc may have been one of the reasons that he was shot. Then again, on the other hand, we're looking at the information, as Dave mentioned, about his rather questionable past during World War II, his appointment of Hermann Obst to oversee the Vatican Bank scandal, which is rather like sending in a weasel to count the chickens, and his appointment of people like Joseph Bernardin, who can find sympathy in their hearts for Cardinal Stepanak, and John Paul II's own seeming plan to go and pray at the grave of Cardinal Stepanak. So, again, the focus for much of the show, even though not explicitly, will be implicitly on the very personality of Pope John Paul II, the man whose attempted assassination, or apparent attempted assassination in 1981, is the springboard for this whole work.
Okay, well, I think rather than take some precious time for phone calls to sum up, because we've been doing that sort of as we go along, we'll provide a brief summary of this show at our program 1 week from tonight. By the way, for those people who may have just tuned in, what you have heard, what we're hearing is the concluding part of the first of a five-part, five-hour-a-piece series detailing the events surrounding the shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 81. The next programs are going to be on four successive Thursdays in May, the 8th, 15th, 22nd, and 29th from 7 p.m. to midnight inclusive. And we will sum up the information on tonight's broadcast at the beginning of next week's, because we do have some time for phone calls and don't want to waste.